You are now listening to the Voice of San Diego Podcast Network. For more information, visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts.
Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres. We got our first win.
That's right. Christian, I keep saying Charlie Villanueva. That's what I keep doing. But I love Christian Villanueva, what he did last night. That was amazing.
Pretty three exciting.
That was. I got to exhale because 0-5 would be rough.
Well, 0-5, you start to go with the whole jokes about, like, can we do the 0-162? Might as well. At least that's something, you know? 0-6, 0-7 just gets sad.
Yeah. Well, tonight, Dallas is sick, but he put a column up today, his MLB predictions. Check that out. And everybody, thanks for coming out to the opening day after party last week. That was a lot of fun at
so
Bay City Brewing. Yeah, it was really great. Dallas did a lot of work to put that together, so thank him on Twitter.
Yeah, and we raised a couple $100.
Yeah, it was cool.
It's sold some very shirts. Cool that the Padres community is... At least the core of it is thriving. Yeah. Yes.
The blog boys.
Yes.
That's us. Well, we have two special guests tonight. We have Andy Keats, the regular.
What's up, fellas?
Welcome, Andy.
Hey.
How are we doing?
And
we have Eno Saris from The Athletic. How you doing?
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming
so
on.
So cool.
Yeah. So you're an analytics editor at The Athletic, and it sounds like there's a lot to talk about. We have, you're in town. You wrote a piece about Charlie Blackmon a couple days ago.
Yeah, about the importance of hit tool. I guess he said something that was really cool. It was like, you have to hit before you can hit for power.
Yeah.
I was like, that, duh, but awesome. Let me look into that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting.
I think I have the statistics that support that.
Yeah.
Well, he was talking a lot about like how he needed the opportunity to work on his power stroke. I thought that was really fascinating and self-effacing. But do you see anybody on the Padres organization that could go through that kind of transformation?
Well, you know, some people were talking about Eric Hosmer, having that hope for Eric Hosmer that he would, you know, maybe alter his approach. And he definitely comes with hit tool and with contact first. And that's his best thing is the ability to hit. I'm a little skeptical that someone who just got that much money is looking for an adjustment. You know, I think he just got rewarded for what he does. So,
yeah,
I'm not sure that anyone sticks out for me, except for maybe I do have one. Mm-hmm. Luis Urias.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Because when I watch him, what like the number one thing that, it, you know, people are like, oh, I don't know where he can play. Is he going to be short? Second? What, you know, the number one thing when I look at him is that dude can hit.
Yeah. Get his bat in the lineup.
Yeah. It doesn't matter where you can hit. And I think, you know, there's some other body types a little bit like that. Willie Calhoun, who just got traded to the Rangers in the Yu Darvish deal. There's some body types where you look at them, and you're like, you know, that's a weird body. Like, where are you going to play?
Now explain the body type. Is that the beard? Is that really what we're looking at here? Because Blackmon, since he adopted this, like, mountain man, he's gone more extreme than everyone. All of a sudden just, I had him on my fantasy, so I watched this, like, progression. As more hair came, the better hitter he became.
Well, you know, actually, another thing that folds into this, and I just saw Charlie and told him about the piece, and this came up, is that the ball is different. And so the ball, if the ball is going to reward you when you put it in play, you should put it in play.
Yes.
So that's why I think if you look at the last offseason, there were things that were very strange about the last offseason. But in some ways, if you look at Todd Frazier only getting 2 for 16, yes, that's very strange. However, he now represents basically everyone. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, everyone can hit 25 to 30 homers and, you know, hit 210 and walk. That's what we've created with sabermetrics and analytics. In some ways, we've created this player that it's going to walk a lot, strike out a lot, and hit a lot of homers. But that means that since we've created that, there's so many of them that they're no longer in demand. Instead, Eric Hosmer gets $140 million. And everyone's saying, oh, that was a bad deal, whatever. That dude can hit.
Yeah.
You know, so I was saying to Charlie, like, oh, I found this thing, you know, a little bit more contact among the power surgers. And I said offhandedly, like, well, and now that the ball's different. You know, it rewards you for putting in play. And he's like, oh, so I'm not a good hitter then.
Yeah. I like that. I like that image of that.
And then immediately the pitcher next to him goes, I told you.
Well, yeah. Then I'm a big fan of the ball change because I always love contact baseball. You know, baseball gets boring to me when it's waiting for the big hit. I'm a big singles guy.
So
contact. Let's get some stuff going here.
So that would be second wave. I mean, the first wave of the ball was everyone's hitting dingers.
Right.
But if you're right, like if that leans to a sort of second wave of let's now go and find contact,
yeah,
then that would be appealing. I for one, would like more balls in play. I think that we've gone too far. It's the least amount of balls in play in the history of baseball.
Right now.
Yeah.
Interesting, because the fun part of baseball to me is defense. Right? And so you're not going to get as much defense if the ball's not in play.
Yeah. Jeff Samardzija said people go to the park to watch people throw it away and fall down.
Can I rephrase my question? Do you think Manuel Margot could be Charlie Blackman someday?
Well, I mean, he was the number one launch angle surger in the second half last year. So he definitely started hitting more fly balls. I think
he told David Loria that what you had identified statistically was the result of an actual adjustment.
Nice. And I think the next adjustment is with contact and with plate discipline. I think if he can just swing it more strikes and swing it less non-strikes, that I think will be, if he does that, then you could have a 300 hitter with, I'm not sure if he'll hit 30, but I think you could have like a 25-25 guy or something like that. I mean, there's a star in there. I mean, I think it's just the last remaining thing is a little bit of plate discipline. It's not, and he's not even that bad. I mean, he's not.
He's been worse this year, small sample size, at least in my memory. But
he
no
started out rough
that.
Last year too. That's when it right came now. To plate discipline. And by the end of the year, I think you saw like a widening of that gap between zone swing and reach rate. So. I think he's really exciting. I think it's he's that was a great acquisition, and you know he's part of the core going forward.
The guy I wonder about, because they seem, one of the first things I've noticed about the Padres this year is they're playing Asuaje every day. They play with their lineup a lot, but Asuaje is like plugged in at second, and it's just so hard to dream on a guy who has no power.
Yeah,
I mean dead nothing power. He gets into one, and it doesn't even get to the warning track.
Yeah,
and
Wait, didn't he hit a home run already this year?
I don't think he did.
I might be wrong.
Spangenberg anyway. Did.
Yeah, I know Spange did. Yeah. Keep going.
But Asuaje just makes it tough for me to get excited about a guy who, you know, he's got pretty good contact, but he just doesn't get into the ball at all. And I made a joke last night that he would be more interesting if he used anabolic steroids. And a couple of people tisked me. But, do you see guys like that? It's just like, it's just not in him. There's no adjustment to be made. The power's just not there.
Well, I mean, part of his whole game plan is to walk and not strike out. So maybe he is just like, maybe he's not swinging so hard. I mean, like some of it is swinging hard. Some of it is trying in like what you want to do is important. So if he just wants to spray singles, then there's no hope. But I do know from an organizational standpoint, I was just talking to somebody in the organization that they are, you know, trying to preach, you know, loud fly ball contact. They are part of this, you know, launch angle revolution or whatever you want to call it. They're into it. They just, so I'm sure someone's talked to them about it, and maybe some people it's not in there. Yeah. It's not in there. I mean, some people just don't have the bat speed. You have to be able to average exit velos or like around 90. To really be a power hitter at all. And, you know, I don't think he's really there.
So do David Eckstein's not have any value nowadays? Because I kind of view him as that would be my comp.
I think you could do worse with a utility player.
Yeah.
Because utility players are going to come in on the back end of a double switch,
right.
Defensive replacement. And often late in the games, you want contact. And even a single is fine.
Okay.
Because you're trying to move things along, or they're going to come up at a certain point in the lineup where people are on base and stuff. So I think he can be a major leaguer, which is at this point in the Padres' growth cycle, I think it's like, okay, well, no, I think it's like, you know, I don't think he's a core guy. Yeah. And I think Urias can take that job pretty easily if he needs to. But I see enough with the walk rate and the contact rate where I'm like, this guy can play. If he could take some reps at short, he could be your number one bench bat, depth guy, major leaguer. So
yeah.
Yeah, so last night,
Christian
Villanueva.
It's never going to get fixed. Nick, don't worry about it. It's fine.
He had a big night, and Chase Headley did not. What do you think ends up happening with him as a Padre? Do you think they get something for him? Could they get something for him if they eat money? Or?
I don't know, man. I don't think Evan Longoria got much from the Giants.
Wow. And
I don't think Chase Headley is Evan Longoria.
No.
So how many years are left on Headley's contract?
One.
This one?
Yeah, just this year.
Okay. Well, that makes it a little bit easier. Yeah. Maybe in September, in August, someone had lost their third baseman.
Yeah.
But that's,
there's a big hole in the boat, not a small.
But that makes it really painful for y'all because
that means you get to watch him through August. August.
It's such a weird.
By August, we'll be.
I don't think
done.
He makes it. I just don't think he. They may just release. I mean.
Well, what's interesting is when Brian Mitchell pitches badly, we get upset at Headley. That's going to be our summer. So you should come back if you're in town.
That's what we got, right? Both of them.
You paid Chase Headley. For Brian Mitchell.
Yeah. Preller takes two steps forward and one back with that one. Wow.
He didn't have a great night.
No.
Brian Mitchell or Chase Headley? They had a bad night together.
That whole combo is not doing anything for us. Yeah.
I hope their lockers are next to each other.
They are pretty close. No, they're right next to each other.
Oh, good.
Makes perfect sense.
Message.
Because I was waiting for Brian Mitchell. He never came, and so I took Chase Headley. Mitchell is interesting to me because it's a very nice curveball, but I've always thought that he has a boring, straight, fastball that he has no command of. So
that's a big problem sort for of setting up the curve.
That's what happened, right? I mean, he couldn't find the plate.
Yeah. He couldn't even find the plate with the curve either.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It didn't look good.
So one thing that's been discussed in the blogosphere and Padres Twitter has been the injury of Denelson Lamet and how the information has come out about his MRI. I guess last week he actually had one. And they don't want to give out the results. What do you think about the way that this team reports on injuries like that?
It was very strange because he was in the clubhouse today. And traditionally, you're not supposed to be able to say no. I mean, it's the speaking to the public, speaking to the media is written into the collective bargaining agreement.
Right.
Oh, you requested and they said.
No, I didn't request because I didn't even know it was an issue.
Okay.
But standing there in the clubhouse, I was like, oh, Denilson's here. I thought maybe he'd be on rehab or something. You know, like,
yeah, he was in the dugout last night. Yeah,
he's here. And I guess the .. was like, and then someone was like, but you can't talk to him. Huh. I was like, what? And he's like, they're not letting him talk to anybody. And I'm like, that's bizarre. There are these moments where I look around, I'm like, is anybody taking crazy pills? Like, what's happening here? Because Yasiel Puig came in. And they were like, he will only talk for a couple of questions, and he has like a handler, and it wasn't just like a translator; it was like a person who'd step in and be like, "That's enough." And you're like, "That's I mean, it's not illegal,
right?
But it's not supposed to be like
how it works."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, can I propose a conspiracy?
Sure.
By all means,
that's what it seems like everybody does. It's like this.
Well, I think the Padres.
I hope this
blame
is going to be better than he's injured.
For some part of the injury or not addressing it correctly. And with all the kids coming up, they're like, we just screwed up our biggest one coming out of the gate.
Oh, you think he was injured before that last spring?
Yeah, and they
started.
Pushed him too hard and they weren't listening. I think that there's something the Padres are trying to be like, if we let out how this went down, we're going to lose faith in all the kids coming up.
Wow.
I can't imagine any other reason why they would. He literally said, "I'm not going to tell you what the results were.
But
we have the results. We know what's going on, but you can't know about it. That doesn't happen."
Yeah.
Can the player just say, "I don't want one"? Is that
an MRI?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it gets complicated because you don't want to be seen as uncoachable or a problem, and I think mostly people want to know what's going on.
Yeah.
And if there's any pain. That whole relationship is actually very interesting and very hard to navigate, because players will say they're not hurt when something's bothering them.
Right.
And then the organization could get the blame when the player was saying he's fine.
Yeah, I mean, we're watching it now with the Spurs and... why am I blanking?
That's Kawhi. Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing where Kawhi is like, I want treatment outside of the team. And there's definitely two parties interested here, right? It's not just...
And they should be on the same...
They should be on the same page, but that's not how it is with these athletes nowadays.
But I guess Leonard probably has a paycheck coming. I think he's nearing the end of his contract.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I want to be fully right.
Yeah.
Maybe. And I don't want them saying I'm cleared to play and then have this be a chronic issue. That's sort of my outside reading. In this case, you would think, you know, what's happened has happened.
Right.
Why not just put whatever spin you're going to put on it, you know?
And here's what we learned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't know. It seems really weird.
Well, it seems like the nightmare scenario everybody's anticipating is that 2 months go by and then they cut him. I mean,
the surgery.
You mean Tommy John?
So then it's pushed back 2 months, and
that actually, I think that is probably most likely, is that it's a partial tear, and they know that if they announce that it's a partial tear, everyone says, "Oh, you just get the Tommy John already." Where we've seen some guys like Masahiro Tanaka, Garrett Richards. I would put probably a dot 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 on that one because it hasn't been that long, but
right.
And he was hurt last year. But there have been guys who've gotten the diagnosis of partial UCL tears, have done some sort of platelet rich. Blah 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 blah, whatever. Some sort of rehab and, you know, non-invasive surgery, have come back and have pitched through it. And, you know, sometimes people feel like there's the other shoe's waiting to drop. But to some extent, you know, one thing I did a piece once where I asked everybody, once you got into the game, what was the number one thing that you learned? Once you got into a front office, you know, what was off the record? Just tell me what's the thing that you learned that you were surprised about. And one of the people said, pitchers are always hurt.
Hmm.
And it's just a question of how much and, you know, how far they want to get pushed and this and that. So that could be some insight into this situation. You know, they don't want everyone else saying he's really hurt when they think he's sort of hurt.
Pitchers are always hurt.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Does that mean we're expecting to, like, is a 95-mile-an-hour fastball not something that is sustainable over a career for most people, but we expect it, so we just... make him do it?
I mean, one thing that happens is that we know from science that it's more stressful to pitch closer to your personal maximum. That much we know. We put the sleeve on them, we ask them to throw, and one person's 95. If he can throw 99 and he's throwing 90 and he's sitting 95, that's fine.
Right. Okay.
But if you can only throw 95 and you're throwing 94 every time, that's stressful.
Yeah.
And that's going to lead to more injuries. I think pitchers are always hurt also means that there's always soreness, and trying to understand like normal soreness versus non-normal soreness.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I never thought about it like that. But
are we pro or anti the robot UCL that'll come eventually? The metal UCL that takes this off the table. Is that an improvement or
I mean, as long as it doesn't lead to performance, right?
Right.
Like, well, the 120-mile-an-hour fastball. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, well, that'd be kind that's of interesting. Kind of interesting. Yeah. But then what are we going to do for the hitters?
You know? Right.
Robot eyes.
Right. Yeah.
Then we just have robots playing, and I don't think people really want that.
Right.
But maybe, you know, they've made some advancements with, like, a Tommy John that takes less time.
Yeah.
There's, like, a new surgery that, you know, 4 to 6 months, they think. Mm. Some people have tried that. But the number of successful surgeries on that level is on one hand.
Yeah, I would think you'd only want to do that if you were like at the end of your career and you're trying to give it a go.
But get back in quick. Yeah.
If you're 23, it's like, all right, give me the one that has a 90% success rate over 25 years.
Yeah, the other thing that's weird is that the other thing that people are doing with Tommy John is trying to come back later, so stretching it out. Mm-hmm. So why would you take the surgery that's like 4 to 6 months, and they're telling that guy who had Tommy John he needs to take 15 months?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think is the next trend in baseball analytics that we're not talking about now as much that we will be in, say, 3 years?
I've been talking about it for a while, and I think it's starting to take hold, is development.
Uh-huh.
So the better you get at linking mechanics and like how the players are playing the game to outcomes reliably, the better you can sort of start to define best practices. Hmm. And once you have those best practices that you are confident are linked to good outcomes, then you can create player populations that have best practices. And you can say, oh, dude, you've got a high spin four seamer, but you're throwing it out of this two thirds slot. Why don't you come up here, work on the curveball, and we'll turn you into, you know, what Rich Hill did when he went from being sidearm to going over the top. Or the opposite. You've got a low spin curveball, Brian Mitchell, and you're throwing up here, and you don't know where it's going anyway. So let's drop the arm slot and see if we can at least get like a righty Brad hand out of you or something. So, you know, once you the perils of that is you've got a, like an 18-year-old, and do you really want to change him at 18? Or maybe he's going to grow into himself and be better in his own way. That stuff's to be figured out. But more and more, like the Milwaukee Brewers just tore down their spring training facility, and in the next 8 months they're going to build a new replica of their home park so that they can practice as they're going to play with the same dimensions. And then they're also creating a sports science lab that'll be on in the complex, and that lab will be constantly monitoring the spin rate on their pitchers and bullpens so that if the spin rate drops, they can stop the bullpen. Hopefully stop before they get injured. And
something the pitcher couldn't even tell himself, right?
Yeah. Before they know.
So cool.
And then also maybe create new pitches where, you know, we think you need something in this velocity band with this kind of spin. Let's look at you with the slow motion photography and look at how your fingers are coming off the ball and sort of engineer this pitch with you. And sort of, you know, like I said, turn the stuff that we've done analysis wise into best practices for our kids coming up, because that's you already have those kids. If you could turn more of your kids into major leaguers, you would be ahead of the others.
Yeah. Some of that stuff is so odd to me. It's like, now a lot of this might be like post hoc explanation stuff that you hear in spring training anyway, but I swear every spring training you'll hear from some young pitcher who was at AA the last year and didn't have good results. And there's some story that's an explanation that, well, he started tinkering with his cutter and he changed his grip and he changed his windup and he tried to do something on his own. He didn't really talk to the development staff about it, and that's why it was bad. It's like a second round pick just changes what he does. No one gets involved with that. He just is free to make these changes on the fly. It's like this is a multi-billion dollar industry, and they're just like changing shit up on their own.
4K cameras capturing your every cell. Yeah.
Well, the open secret is that's the major leagues that you're talking about, and the minor leagues is like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So the coaches in the minor leagues, they're populated by former players, and so if that's former players, we're not talking about players that are playing now that are comfortable with all this. We're talking about players that played 10 years ago who don't know about all this, and some of them are learning, and some of the better teams are hiring independent coaches that learn on their own and are better. But like I've joked around with pitchers, like if you just got a ton of people out on your curveball and you walk off the mound and your pitching coach says, great start, what were you throwing? Tell them you threw a bunch of changeups. Because that'll make them moist.
Yeah.
You know, just if you have a splitter and they say, what kind of a changeup do you throw? Circle change. If you throw a cutter and they ask you, what's that? Don't call it a cutter. It's a slider. And this kind of like managing.
What was that story last
managers?
Week? There was a story last week that I think you were talking about somebody who's like, yeah, all I did with my cutter last year was I started telling people it was a slider.
Yeah, I forget who that was too. But that's when it came up. I mean, that's like, and you know, if they had the capacity, I think maybe it's sometimes like amount of coaching staff. Like they have tons of players coming through and they have tons of players to manage. And a lot of times it's like one pitching coach for that whole team. And they're not all the same level of professionalism, and you're not going to pay attention to all of the players the same, right? So you're going to – the star will get more – like it's a little bit more surprising if it is a star, the second round pick who's playing around with stuff and nobody noticed. But everybody else on the team, until you do something that makes you get noticed, you could be doing anything.
Hmm.
Yeah.
One guy I was talking to, Driveline does these weighted balls, and some teams don't like weighted balls. So my guy was doing Driveline in the shower. So he would take a 30-40 minute shower and do all his plyo balls and stuff in the shower so that nobody could see him.
It's gonna bother him. Yeah. That's
great.
That sports science stuff is very exciting to me.
Yeah.
I'd like to know more about that. I wonder if they like take, you know, you see it on the Xbox Kinect or whatever, where the balls are connected to all the joints, and so they do all that kind of stuff.
They throw in an environment that is the same every time, so that you can, that you actually know. It's called like a box of known. It's like a, I forget exactly what it's called, but it's like there's a box that they throw in that they know all the dimensions of the box.
Yeah.
So that when they can look at different the pictures in it, they know all the lengths and they can compare it to the box. And
yeah. It would be so cool to have like an angle of a pitcher that has every pitch he throws throughout the whole like spring training, and then composite into one and see where it, you know, all is the same. I don't know. There's just a lot of cool stuff you can derive from
some
that.
Of the stuff they're not allowed to do in game, because if you do something in game, you have to share it with other teams.
Oh, is that a rule?
Yeah. So some stuff they can do, they can have basically like a TrackMan type thing in bullpens in spring on their own stuff. But if they did one in the bullpen in the major leagues, they'd have to share the data out of those bullpens.
Oh, that sounds like a horrible rule.
I bet. I'm not sure that they do, and I'm sure right. Like there's probably people who play around
with
that.
Lots of Bill Belichick's
out there. Maybe here in San Diego where the rules are.
Hey, it was just Advil, man. Yeah. It was just Advil.
The union's going to have to get involved in some of this stuff eventually.
Yeah,
too.
It like sounds like it.
Some of this stuff, like the constant monitoring of a player's health that could change their assessment of them.
I think especially the neuroscouting was interesting because, there's a direct link between how quick you can kind of react to things on the computer screen. And Mookie Betts is like a success story for neuroscouting, where they had him kind of looking at dots on the screen and pushing him if he saw certain things and whatever.
It's like he's a savant.
Savant.
Pushing
buttons. I was going to say.
Yeah. It's like every video gamer's wet dream.
Yeah.
But I think the problem with that is like, what if you score poorly, but you're still a pretty good ball player.
Yeah.
And the team like either trades you away or doesn't advance you. Then they have this sort of, they know something about your health.
Yeah.
That they can use against you. Well, and
it could even get weirder in like the whole mental thing of like trying to find a Khalil Green issue, you know, years before it happens and, you know, mental health or what. Yeah. It could get really crazy.
Because they stopped a couple basketball players from even playing in the NBA
because of their mental health.
No, because of heart issues.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And with that, you're like, okay, I guess I'm okay with that, because what if he died? That would be terrible. I don't want him to die. At the same time, you're like,
what if he didn't die and he made millions
of
dollars
in the NBA and he might not have died. Yeah. And then if you take it to mental health, I think you're taking another step forward. Like, just because someone has a propensity for something doesn't mean that we can't sort of nurture it out, or that they are
right.
There's no 100%.
It just feels like the whole way society is going, and we don't need to get into this, but the mental health thing, and you start getting into mental, a little much for sports.
Yeah.
Do you notice a spectrum of between the teams of who's actually paying attention to this stuff? Is there some teams that are still in the dark ages about it, or is everybody pretty much caught up now? You can't be left behind.
I think the development thing is actually still the big, big difference maker between teams. There are some people who just have their minor league coaches and they tell them, you know, low and away and, you know, cutters in, and, you know, it's just the same old thing.
Wow.
And then there are like the Dodgers who, when they have reliever tryouts, they basically just put them in front of the track man and take the ones with the highest spin and say, you guys can come to spring training. Later, dudes.
Amazing.
That's what Ryan Buchter told me last year. So, you know, I think in terms of analytics, there's been a lot of catch up, but turning that analytics into development and into sort of secondary stuff, I think there's still a big difference.
Yeah.
Do you think there's is there anything out there that you look at is just like, that's magic beans? Just garbage, fake stuff.
I mean, they call it eyewash. what is it?
Who
what
calls it eyewash? Those players and teams.
Yeah, in some ways, like command.
Yeah.
It's interesting to say that after Brian Mitchell, you know, because he definitely did not have it.
Right.
And when someone definitely does not have it, you're like, gosh.
Damn it, Chase Headley. Sorry, that's just a reflex.
Yeah. I also think of like Carlos Carrasco definitely did not have command. That's why he was traded. He's not going to be healthy. Doesn't have command, and he just started, you know, he got a little bit of a velocity boost, started throwing to the middle of the zone, trusting his movement and figured something out. Like, I feel like command is like an adjustment, a mechanics adjustment away from not being an issue for a lot of guys. What's eyewash? I don't know. It's usually like practices, like T work. Yeah. That is useless.
Yeah.
What? It's actually bad for the player to work on the tee because
Tony Gwynn is rolling over in his grave.
No,
right now.
Dude. I mean, maybe I saw.
I'm joking.
No, I saw a cool thing where like Scooter Jeanette was like, if you pretend like you're looking for a pitcher and then look at the tee the last minute, then it's okay. But otherwise, there's a lot of people who look at the tee. And imagine, like, if you're hitting.
So it pulls your eye.
You look at the tee. Yeah. When are you ever going to swing like that? When are you ever going to swing with your head looking down the whole time? Like, your head is looking down the whole time, and then you swing through. Your head is always
following
the ball. So I think tee work in general is just.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Maybe
yeah.
It can help you, like, sort of pull your hands through and work on. Like, you can use the tee and, like, put it really high and tight and sort of work on it.
Well, all my Tony Gwynn videos growing up told me it was more about getting your spot in the batter's box depending on the pitcher.
Well, here's something.
So it was like where your bat would make contact.
You may not want to know. May not love or may. You can boo.
No, I'm okay. I can take criticism.
Are you going to take a shot at Tony Gwynn, right?
Jesus Christ.
Okay.
Eno, what are you thinking?
Sorry. People
do you know where you are?
I know. People said he was a peaker.
Oh.
That he peeked back for location.
I
love him even more. That is not a bad thing.
So maybe T work works for him because he is looking back.
Hey,
who said that?
Hey, I'm fine with that.
Hey, I need video. I need video evidence.
Hey, if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
Is that Wade? Was it Wade Boggs?
Blink. He would say that.
Blink twice. If yes. Okay. Thank you for your honesty. So 2 years ago, you published a book called The Baseball Lover's Guide to Craft Beer. I got that right.
It's already out of date.
Yeah, but it's a cool thing pick up. Yeah, well, how do you feel about Petco's experience beer-wise?
When I wrote that, it was a comfortable number one. I thought it was by far and away number one. I think that some other, I think Seattle's gotten close to it. And I'm not sure, all the decisions have not necessarily been in the last few years have been towards better beer. Just sort of looking around, the frickin' Friday, the spot behind home plate, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When that first popped up, I was like, wow, so many beers. I went there last night. There were 20. It was half the beers they normally have.
Yeah. And each one has two and sometimes only have one.
Right.
No, the one stall that's Craft Beers of San Diego. Yeah, not the little stations.
Oh, I was thought you were saying.
Oh, yeah, but those
two. Those are right
here. Those
near
have
there.
Actually been, I think, a step in the right direction. I like that because the one that has the hazy one that's right by that's in the back.
Oh, Resident.
Resident. So yeah, I like the Resident Citra.
Chasing Citra.
Citra is one of the better ballpark beers you can get, I think. And then I had the hazy Aloha Sculpin.
Mm-hmm.
Was good, and I like that they have the whole Sculpin array. That's fun. But I remember that place, Craft Beer, I remember that having more selection in the past and having more of a chalkboard feel.
Right.
Where they would run through different stuff. They have Firkin Fridays and that the stuff would be going in and out. Now, every time I go, it's like, it's always just Iron Fist, Alesmith.
Yeah.
They're not treating that like, and so San Francisco has the Public House, which is a chalkboard bar, it has two or three sours, two or three stouts, and it's a chalkboard where things are wiping off and coming on, and it's a beer bar, and you can go in and out. It's attached, it's a little bit off the side, but you can go in and out to the park. So that sort of brings San Francisco up to. So I think right now it's sort of a scrum between Seattle and San Diego and San Francisco, where it used to be that San Diego was by far out in front.
Well, San Diego's had, I don't know if you guys want to share the news, but we've been hauling on some hard times in the beer world.
RIP, the Green Flash Brewery went down. So
and Alpine.
Yeah, they're connected.
I mean, they were connected, but two names that are.
I really like Alpine. I drink a lot of that. So
the first
they had that peanut butter beer, didn't they?
That was Belching Beaver, I believe.
Yeah.
That was, for instance, a shitty beer. From a shit brewery as opposed to Alpine.
All right.
Boom.
But
Tony Gwynn's a peaker, and Andy Keats doesn't like Belching Beaver.
Not compared to fucking Nelson, man. Yeah. Jesus.
But, you know, it's funny how far beer has changed. I remember when I started my chats on Fangraphs, my baseball chats, one of the first beers that I recommended to people was Green Flash West Coast IPA. Mm-hmm. That's sort of 2010, 2011. I came to the West Coast and I was like, wow, this is, I love this beer. And Sculpin and Green Flash West Coast IPA were like mind blowers. And then over the course of time, I recommended it less and less often. I think that's actually related to what happened with them as a company, is that they were sort of holding on to West Coast IPA when we were, as a beer community, was sort of moving past that.
Right.
They also changed the recipe too.
Oh, they did.
2 years ago, made it. When they expanded to 50 states.
They try to make it hoppier.
Yeah. So they expanded too fast.
It just made it worse.
It seems like the trend is just make it hoppier.
Right. Yeah. Well, and then Alpine is was kind of like this cool little thing that you could never get to.
Yeah. Right.
So that was like the hipster recommendation, was like, oh, you'll never find it, but if you can,
definitely try it.
Yeah.
You can drive by Mark Grant's house too.
But I think, you know, I think they're an interesting lesson in how not to grow, I guess. And, you know, one of my favorite breweries up north is Fieldwork, and that Alex Tweed is the brewer there, and he came from Ballast Point. Ballast Point and then Modern Times.
Yeah.
And he's a great brewer, and he's hooked up with Barry.
He used to own restaurants down here. He owned Local Habit.
So they're up there, and they've learned, I think, from what's going on, and they are just doing tap rooms.
Love it.
So they have five tap rooms up north: Monterey, Napa Valley, you know, Sacramento, and that gives you that local feeling. It gives you the hard to get feeling, even though it's nearby, and it makes sure it's fresh, and gives you that really sort of independent feeling, even as they're growing and being bigger.
Right.
Once it starts showing up at the Safeway, I think people are kind of like,
for $17.99 for a six pack.
Yeah, then people are kind of roll their eyes and stuff. So
when you come into San Diego and you're staying here, what's the first beer you want to try, or first beer you're going for?
Well, my mother-in-law got me the Modern Times sampler.
Okay.
At Costco, no less. But I was happy with that.
Yeah.
I like to go to the Modern Times. I like to go to either Modern Times, really. And then Tiger. I really liked Half Door. I came down here for the All-Star game last year and had some Half Door for the first time. Like that.
A lot of hazies.
Yeah, I like to go to Monkey Paw.
Oh, cool.
Which is now, I think that the Monkey Paw is fully operated by Coronado now.
Whoa, interesting.
Yeah.
There needs to be some kind of like pulled the
jukebox away.
No, so it's not as divey anymore, huh?
Feels that way.
There needs to be some kind of Friday night drama about beer in San Diego. It's like Dynasty or something.
There's always. Oh, you mean like a movie?
Like a dramatic. You know what I mean?
Because
like,
there is drama here. There's
that's what I'm
drama.
Saying. It's so crazy. The beer scene in San Diego makes soap operas look tame.
Yeah, there's people listening right now who have tuned out of this beer section because they're still mad at me about my last venture. I worked with Condé Nast on a beer magazine last year called October. And it was Condé Nast, and they took money from Anheuser-Busch.
That was really the issue? For you, it was the issue.
What?
That they took money from Anheuser-Busch.
It was not an issue for me. Well, it was, but what they told me was, and it was true when I was there, was that there was nobody over my shoulder.
Right.
So there was nobody telling me what to publish.
But people revolted because of that sponsorship?
I can understand that it's a little bit weird to have like an advertiser's that far in bed with somebody who's making content.
Yeah. Hmm.
It's a little bit weird. But I think also people didn't understand what we were.
Yeah.
It was like basically Maxim for beer. I mean, we had pieces like, you know, five great places to drink beer after you had a round of golf.
Yeah.
And it's not... We're not doing hard-hitting journalism. Yeah,
not highbrow.
We're not going to pull any punches because Anheuser-Busch is involved.
Right.
There are no punches that's thrown.
Like, seems like, yeah. Seems like such a
minor. It's supposed to be. It's supposed to go right next to like Bon Appetit and, you know, in the Condé Nast grouping of just like light fare.
Yeah, fun.
Yeah. But
beer is that snooty, huh?
But, you know, I understand. And it didn't end up being for me. So I do know that there are like boards out there where like, you know, there's pictures of me with devil horns and stuff.
Jeez. Bought.
Yeah, bought and sold. Yeah.
Are there any players that ask you?
And all I got was a living wage.
Yeah.
Hey, come on. Like I make a buck.
Yeah.
Are there any players or team employees that actually just off to the side ask you questions about beer? Any recommendations?
Yeah. Brandon Morrow was a big beer head.
Okay.
Yeah. When he was in town, he bought my book. Cool. And I think Ryan Buchter's into beer. Corey Kniebel with the Brewers brews beer. Had a long conversation with Eric Thames, who helped brew beer for the Brewers, for the crowds there. And we were talking about how, you know, he was in Korea, and I was like, that's all lagers, right? And he's like, I know. And he's like, I hate it. I love IPAs. I'd rather have the high ABV. You know, like, don't give me 8. You know, 3% beers. I don't want to deal with that.
Right.
So love it.
Last beer question. Do you like Tony Gwynn's beer?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we can be friends.
Yeah. Feel like, do they cheat on it? Or
No, it's great.
No, I like it.
You know what?
For what it is, yeah, I think it's excellent.
And also, just like Alesmith, I think, is underrated. I think people don't understand. X is, I think, just a really nice, clean crusher, like, you know, Saturday mowing the lawn crusher. And all the variants on Speedway, like the Vietnamese, all the different variants they put on that are so good. Yeah. That is like a world-class beer. And then they come out and do 394, which is really fun, and it's a good beer. So, you know, crushers and deep beers. Alesmith is really good.
It sounds like his son's going to have a beer coming out.
Yeah. No, they made one. Yeah. I think it's a double.
Should have made it a session.
Because he's not as good.
Could have called it like 194 for his batting average. Oh. I love Tony Gwynn Jr. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know if they've officially announced it yet, but yeah.
We did.
I will. I
it's
think
officially
about,
announced.
I think about Tony Gwynn Jr. every single day. But so before we wrap up, you know. When we jump people into the circle of the Kept Faith, we give them a pack of baseball cards.
Nice.
And you have to open it on air and just tell us
92 Fleer Ultra.
Tell this us what comes out of your heart.
When they started overproducing, wasn't it?
Yeah. Because of the...
it's over by like 95.
That Ken Griffey Jr. card in 89 ruined all baseball cards.
Well, there we go.
There we go.
All right. Luis Salazar. That's our start on the front here. Oh my goodness. This is an interesting card to have first. Sam Horn.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah, baby.
Let's
go, O's.
He's in a Baltimore uniform, but
damn right he is.
What's the whole deal? Why are the Red Sox boards are called like Sons of Sam Horn? There's like a Red Sox deal. Was he a Red Sox player first?
He did play for the Red Sox. I didn't know that. Yeah. Unfortunately, I always regard him as
92 Fleer is also the time when they just made it one line on the back of the card.
Yeah, they made it all colored.
Yeah, but you know what? It's not a bad set. I like, you know, it looks a little bit like one of my favorite sets of all time, which is the Stadium Club.
Right,
and that was like 91. They probably are copying. Yeah. Mike Greenwell. This is how all baseball players used to look. Yeah, just right. Like sort of dopey first baseman.
Nope.
Is he first baseman? Right. Oh, outfield. Oh,
right. He's the one who lost the MVP to Jose Canseco.
Right? Oh, yeah. And he's mad about it.
They're pissed about it, yeah.
Oh. Maybe that year he hit 9 homers. That was an MVP year. Felix Fermin, or I think I said it right. I don't know. Oh, we got a good one. George Brett. George Brett.
What Eric Hosmer could have been.
Mr. Pine Tar.
If only he was a little more angry.
Yeah.
One thing that... was interesting that George Brett said was that he learned how to hit when he threw sidearm one time, and he felt it, like he was like, oh, that's
the spot,
that's how I'm supposed to swing. Which is interesting to think that's a link between sort of pitchers and hitters. There is a lot in common.
That's interesting.
Kent Herbeck.
Yep.
There he is.
I was in Atlanta that year, so I do not like that guy. Dave Henderson had a
look at that.
Didn't he have that great batting stance where he was kind of like bouncing and he had the Dave Henderson. Didn't he have the Dave?
I get him and Dave Parker mixed up a lot, I think.
Well, he was Hindu, so my dad lived in San Francisco from 86 on, so I definitely watched a little bit of the Hindu. Lenny Dykstra.
Hey.
Late career, wow. Lenny Dykstra.
Oh, wait, George late. Brett and Lenny Dykstra in the same deck.
Wait, when was he born?
My high school
63?
Self would have been
he's not late
in
career.
Love with this deck.
Look at nails. He looks beautiful.
Looks normal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is in his prime.
He didn't age well.
A lot's happened since.
I mean, in the face. on the field, he did all right.
Or online.
Yeah, and yeah. He's still, in his batting sense, you can still see the big pile of chew in his cheek.
Yeah. Lenny Harris. This is a great pack. Lenny Harris is the pinch hit king.
Oh, really?
I think he has more pinch hits than anybody else in baseball.
Oh, I thought that was Mark Sweeney.
Matt Stairs.
I could be wrong.
Yeah, I don't know.
Everything's Dibble. A Padre.
Rob Dibble.
Wow. I loved him.
Still do the Nationals broadcast?
Well, I was going to say something I would regret.
I love Dibble.
Oh, my goodness.
Day.
Jeff Blauser. This
Jeff
dude.
Blauser.
This dude. I love Jeff Blauser. I grew up, I was in Atlanta, 86 to 94.
Peak TBS years, right?
And I would in like the early years, I would get a ticket at the top and just run down.
Yeah,
I mean they didn't care. They were just like, yes, please. So there looks like there's looks people here.
This is for the TV audience here.
Yeah, and Jeff Blauser was interesting to me because he gave me hope. I thought this guy has very few skills, and. Maybe I can have very few skills and be in the major leagues. I mean, he just like wasn't a very good shortstop and was not a very good hitter, but he played baseball.
Yep. Came up through the 80s. A lot can happen.
Yeah. I mean, him and Mark Lemke, I was like, wow. Are we going to win with this duo? Yeah. Is this our keystone combo here? Jeff Houston. Tino Martinez.
There he is.
He was underrated. He was underrated. I really liked him. He hit 205 in 91. Wow.
Yikes.
Was that before he got good?
He was
good at some point,
yeah.
Right?
Later. He was overshadowed by a lot of those Mariners, I think. Yeah. Then, then he went.
Oh, 112 ABs. This must be early.
Yeah. It was like probably his first year.
Yeah. Oh, I wonder if that's a rookie card. Greg Myers. And Luis Salazar. That was
good
a fun pack.
That is
good
a great
job.
Pack.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Fleer. Not a sponsor.
I actually remember those guys.
Well, thanks for coming on. You know, that was great.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Check out Eno's work at the Athletic and on Twitter at Eno Saris.
We've got a fun San Diego group. It's Dennis Lynn.
Yeah.
And we've got, I think I know his last name. Dustin
Palmentier.
Dustin Palmentier. So that's our crew down there. I'll be writing something. From time to time, and I've got something in the works for San Diego. So I write for the local sites, and I also write national stuff. We got Ken Rosenthal, Peter Gammons, Jason Stark up top. And if you happen to be a fan of or a secondary fan of another team, we've got good.
Yeah,
writers.
When are you guys getting Baltimore?
Oh, actually, I shouldn't have brought that up. Gosh,
no.
You got. I saw John Bernhardt was contributing with.
Yeah,
you guys. He could write about the Orioles.
There are certain markets where it's hard to, like, we try to identify the best, like, and just try to get the very best writer in the market and make sure that's the one. And some markets, either that's hard or that person is hemming and hawing or, you know, whatever. So I think that's what's probably going on in Baltimore. But
trying to bring in John Mioli. He's a good beat writer.
Yeah.
That guy's good. He does a great job.
Well, I'll pass that recommendation along. But the Athletic. So there is a pay for it. But right now there's a $2.99 a month promo for opening week, cool. And otherwise is my inanity and stupidity is for free on Twitter at ENOSARIS. I warn you, there would be sandwiches and beer.
Sandwiches and beer.
Yeah.
You definitely made a case to subscribe.
Yeah. All right, sweet. Check it out.
Definitely.
It's a really good app for your phone. It's really clean and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Ad-free, I should mention. Yeah, you're like, why am I paying
that's really
for this?
Great. Yeah. Yeah.
No,
really
ad-free. Cool. And I think, you know, coming from Fangraphs, where one of the number one complaints was always like, your stupid ad is in my face. You know, I'm like, this is fun. This is nice and clean, looks good, and we have a lot of good writers.
Cool. Well, yeah, you can check our stuff out at thekeptfaith.com and become a patron on our Patreon, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, go Padres.
Bye.
No Headley tonight.
Yay!
The Padres are...
Ball busters!
Well hit deep right. At the fence, it is going. It is going.
Drive right center field. Way back there. Way back. They're near. Going. It's gone.
Great play. Off balance. Throw to first. They got him. The sensational play by Alan Wiggins.
2-0. High fly ball, well hit right field, look out, Maldonado at the wall, Terry Kennedy, home run!
Drive to deep right field, if it's fair, the Padres will have the lead, it is a fair ball!
Going back is Reynolds, and it's...
The show you just heard was part of the Voice of San Diego podcast network. To hear other great shows like the Voice of San Diego podcast, I Made It in San Diego, a show all about the people behind the region's businesses, the award-winning Culture Cast, The Kept Faith, a San Diego sports show, and more, please visit voiceofsandiego.org/podcasts. If you'd like to sponsor any of the podcasts, please email Erin at voiceofsandiego.org. That's Erin at VOSD.org.